why don't we go ahead and get started with the subcommittee on the public hearing portion of Senate Bill or House Bill 2525. We have a number of amendments. We have approved the Dash 26, Dash 27, Dash 28 amendments. Were adopted on the 19th. We have Adrian Sexton with us today, and from the Legislative Fiscal Office, and as well as John Borton should be here somewhere. There he is. There's John. And our clerk is Jamie Penn. Why don't we do this? Let's please invite Representative Shetterly, if you'd like to come forward, and the very least that we could do or should do, where each of the members of the subcommittee have had an opportunity to at least receive the copies of the amendments, starting with the Dash 30 amendments. Would you just start, to Representative Shetterly? Thank you for coming. We appreciate your indulgence and coming and participating with us today. So if you'd like to start at the A-Dash 30 amendments, then we can proceed from there with the public hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, Lane Shetterly, Representative District 34. If I may, I'll also invite David Hendricks up from Legislative Council. David has drafted these, and I appreciate the chance to put these amendments in. I think that getting these amendments into the bill will make it possible to move this bill straight from the House floor to the Senate floor without having to go through the Substantive Committee on the Senate side, since the Judiciary Committee over there has already heard this bill with, in a joint meeting with us. The amendments that you have before you, starting with the Dash 30, I will say first are consensus amendments in each case. I have reviewed them in advance, as has Chip Lazenby from the Governor's Office and David Schumann from the Department of Justice, so this is the same team that pretty well put the bill together, at least spearheaded the putting the bill together, and we are, I think, on board with all of the amendments. The Dash 30 amendments exempt the Governor's Office from the bill. Frankly, it was caught us by surprise the Governor's Office could be implicated in the bill, but I think Mr. Lazenby discovered the Governor does some sort of hearings under the burn grants, the federal fund that he is actually designated by federal law as the hearing officer for. The Dash 31 amendments clarify.
Excuse me, can I just ask a brief question relative to 30? As it relates to 29, 45W was the state land board, and here we're adding 45W to the governor.
Yeah, well, the of course, the state land board is its own entity. Chair of the board members, I'm Dave Hendricks, Legislative Council Office. The 829 amendment did exempt the state land board, but that is a separate entity made up of the governor, the treasurer, and the secretary of state. And, of course, we also exempt the secretary of state and the treasurer under the bill. This merely adds the governor in his capacity as governor rather than as a member of the state land board. That's definitely some requirements using a hearings officer for those few occasions where he would be actually conducting a contested case hearing as the governor.
But do I understand, Mr. Hendricks, that basically nullifies 8.8?
No. Oh, Chair Butler, to confirm the W?
Yes.
That's something that we take care of in the editing process. When we assemble all these amendments into a single amendment, we'll adjust the lettering to make sure that...
Okay. So this would be in addition to the state land board, then the governor. Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 31 amendments are sort of comfort amendments, I think I would say. They specify that the Act does not affect the ability of an agency to use its own alternative dispute resolution. I think they're in some sense that may be unnecessary, but it does serve, I think, our purpose in dealing with the Construction Contractors Board to clarify in their particular case, but also in the other agency that may have its own alternative dispute resolution process, as most do, that they are clearly authorized and, in fact, encouraged to utilize that alternative dispute resolution process, and that the
this bill only gets involved after, in that case, after the alternative dispute resolution process has run its course within the agency, and you have a case that cannot be resolved by the alternative dispute resolution and then is moving into a formal contested case proceeding.
Let me just address, if I may, the specific issue of the Construction Contractors Board. There was some concern whether there was, in fact, four hearings officers to be contributed to the process or whether it was six. There had been some issue over the two that they are using for alternative dispute resolution. And so as to not affect the fiscal, I think we've left the computation of six in for the current calculation. But I believe that they would like it clearly understood for the record that the two employees who are doing the alternative dispute resolution would continue to do that for the Construction Contractors Board. In other words, that there is in fact four positions openings that move to the central hearings panel, but that the Construction Contractors Board alternative dispute resolution work would not be under the direction or control of the central hearings panel, and that if they were to expand additional positions, then that could be taken care of separately. It's my understanding that they would go ahead with their proportionate share based upon six employees, even though there were two that were going to be doing exclusively alternative dispute resolution within the CCD. Now, I believe Mr. Lassany may have something he'd like to respond to there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chip Ladin. I'm legal counsel to Governor John Kitzhaber. My understanding is a little bit of variance with what the chair just said. I believe that under the original bill, there were going to be six positions that were going to transfer to the new chief hearings officer. What the intent of this amendment is just to make clear that a program that the Construction Contractors Board should not be impeded by this transfer of authority. So to keep the fiscal piece in place, we're going to transfer all those employees anyway, but this is a direction from you to the Construction Contractors Board that they are to continue on with this valuable consumer program that they have, and that nothing in the bill should be construed to impede them from doing it. So all the personnel, as I understand it, will transfer over, and instead of two positions, Mr. Chair, I believe it's a total of six. So.
Yeah, all six transfer over, and two can be continued to be used by the Construction Contractors Board for the alternative dispute resolution, and there's no modification of the fiscal with all six showing as a transfer, but being able to continue with the valuable work which they are doing as this alternative dispute resolution work for the, and there are some other requirements which are unique to the Construction Contractors Board, which we became aware of when we heard that budget in part in this particular subcommittee.
Correct, Mr. Chair, and there's a further directive in there to the Chief Hearings Officer to work closely with the board to make sure the program stays intact.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Kreppman.
In regards to any three of you, in regards to the 831, the last sentence says contains restorative language in relation to the panel's sunset date.
I
don't see that in the amendment.
It's contained in the various places throughout, and perhaps this is the time that it should be explained. Adrian,
thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Cook, and committee members. I use that phrase to try to describe so that when you read the amendments and you saw what the specific language did, that when you saw that the amendment might be two or three or four pages long, that you have that understanding that this is a four-year pilot project, and so that the future legislatures don't have to take any additional action should the decision be made to let the pilot program lapse and sunset in 2004. The bill contains the language that would be necessary for the agencies to be restored to their current condition absent House Bill 2525 when the sunset goes into effect.
So those agencies which presently have the ability to handle their own hearings would then be restored to their ability to continue to handle those hearings after a sunset, should that sunset take effect.
But then, Mr. Chair, I would think properly then that those positions would be transferred back if we decide this is an experiment that is not working. Okay.
That is correct. And Mr. Chair, Representative Crump, it is correct that the bill is designed to do that without the necessity of any further legislative action at that time. It's all built into the bill.
Thank you.
Just a question about the builders board, I guess. Why don't we just exclude them if they're going to be treated so differently than others? I'm concerned about the chief hearings officer must defer to the board's request of assigning hearing officers for contested case hearings. That's an unusual kind of thing, isn't it? Not being done anyplace else.
Well, the argument there, Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the argument there was that these are very specialized cases with some highly technical training that the board has already invested in training of these folks. And the argument that we basically had as we were negotiating this was that the people from the CCB and the industry felt that this would bring about an overnight change in the hearings officers that were there. The proponents and myself were arguing that this changed the control over those folks, but not the substance of what it was that they were doing. So there's some comfort language here so that they...
Is it understood to be temporary, or is it going to be...
It has a four-year sunset.
The whole thing
does, but this is a way to buffer some concerns that they expressed in the proponents. That they would be faced upon the effective date of this in 2000 with a grab bag hearings officer that we just, a name just pulled out of a bag. And even though Representative Shetterly and I went to great lengths to explain that that wasn't what was going to happen, we offered this amendment to mollify their concerns.
And Mr. Chair, too, Senator, for one of the reasons, too, not to exempt them entirely as we looked at after the last meeting was the impact on the fiscal. That would have the shift to other agencies of the CCB's share of the overhead. That just was going to be untenable.
I think that's an excellent question, Senator. I'm glad that you raised it because it did deal with the specialized nature, that they are set up to do some very specialized kinds of hearings, and that there is a fiscal impact, which is in fact greater to the construction contracting board as a result of the fact that they will continue with their own alternative dispute resolution, as will other agencies, but in this particular case, because they have their alternative dispute resolution officers are transferred into hearing panels, then they are specifically spelled out that they will continue to do the alternative dispute resolution. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. The Dash 32 amendments are something more technical. They relate to the Division of State Lands, which is the administrative arm of the State Land Board, and I think the amendments are pretty well driven by the exclusion of the State Land Board from the panel. I don't know if that needs any further explanation. The Dash 34 amendments specify that the DEQ need only use panel hearing officers for hearings conducted under the APA contested case provision. That was the intention all along. This gives them clarification as to that. These would only be hearings conducted under the Administrative Procedures Act, not other hearings. The Dash 36 amendments, as you recall, we had higher education in last hearing, I think it was, proposing an amendment that would exclude intra-campus as opposed to inter-campus or system-wide kinds of proceedings. The Dash 36 and the Dash 27 amendments were adopted, I think, at least conceptually by the committee to do that. Frankly, I think that may be more cumbersome than is necessary. Higher ed was never high on the target price of the bill. The Dash 36 would simply exempt the higher education from the bill, and if the committee is inclined to adopt those, which I have absolutely no objection to, then you would just recede from the Dash 27 amendments.
Senator Crowe, just what explains this sort of reversal? We thought we had they were sort of on board with the changes and then suddenly were exempting them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, the reversal, and I'll leave it to you. This is sort of an option for you to, or the committee to choose or not choose. I think our concern, or at least Mr. Hendricks, when he was looking, even when he drafted these, was not sure whether the amendments were absolutely clear as to really capturing the cases and excluding the cases that they'd intended. And so, with the concern of having injected some unintended ambiguity into the bill with respect to what hearings are and what are not covered, this is offered as an option if the committee just wants to exclude higher ed altogether rather than try to create some artificial distinction that may leave people arguing as much about whether this is a covered proceeding or not a covered proceeding as about the merits of the proceeding.
Would higher ed prefer to be excluded?
I think higher ed would prefer to be excluded. Yeah.
So would a lot of other
people. But that is one we're trying to accommodate that request. I think it may have actually...
But we couldn't tell from their testimony. It sounded like they were fully comfortable with the division.
I think they were putting on a brave face.
Okay.
And I appreciate that. And most of the agencies involved in this really have. Been very good about dealing with this entire in the same position. Our concern was in the drafting of it, whether or not it was possible to draft it in such a way that we could be clear as to which hearings would be and would not be covered. And if the committee is inclined, I, as sponsor of the bill, and Mr. Lazenby and Mr. Schumann and the others that have dealt with this, we would have no objection to just excluding the Department of Education, higher education. The Dash 37 amendments, Senator David, do you want to address those?
Chair Butler, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks again. These were amendments that were requested by the Workers' Compensation Division. You may remember that the Workers' Compensation Division was going to be covered by the bill, at least with respect to certain of their hearings that they conduct that really aren't about claims by workers for compensation, which are currently handled by administrative law judges that are hired by the Workers' Compensation Board. In looking at the amendments, and this is kind of relates back to the last set of amendments, it became clear that there was at least one statute, 656-740, where there might be some confusion about whether it was the type of hearing that was going to require the use of the hearing officer from the panel or one of their ALJ bills. And that was especially true because there's a bill that has been passed amending 656-740 that was going to add non-subjectivity claims to 656-740. My understanding that's on the way to the governor and probably would be fine. So they had asked that we specify in the Dash 837 amendment and 656-740 would continue to be heard by ALJs and not by hearing officers. So this is a narrow series of cases where they want to make sure that it's clear that these here are not going to be by chance hearing officers from the panel.
On the Workman's Compensation Division exclusively throughout each of those cases.
Correct. Just to those under that specific statute.
Okay. Let's just flip back, if we could, for just a moment to A36. I was just briefly distracted. And Senator Crow, having had the testimony both from the university system earlier, the Department of Higher Education being included under 27, A27 amendments, which incidentally we did approve on 5 and adopt on the 19th. Do you have a specific recommendation relative to the A26?
Well, I think that higher ed prefers to be exempted and so with an accelerator, I think we ought to do that. So I would move that we recede from the position we took on the A27 amendments to House Bill 2525.
Okay, it's been moved that we received from the...
Are we in work session?
Well, we're really not. We're in hearings.
I beg your pardon.
You don't want a motion.
Okay, and I...
Not quite yet.
No, that motion will be in order shortly. So
okay.
I appreciate that. Thank you very kindly. We'll continue on then. With finishing up on 37.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'll... I'm trying to finish my testimony, and as I've been informed, I have a packed hearing room full of folks for HR 29 upstairs myself, so to run right out there and do that. The Dash 38 amendments, again, are amendments requested by Workers' Compensation Division. Do you want to explain those?
Chair Butler, members of the committee. The Dash 838, again, referring back to the higher education issue, the Workers' Compensation Division realized that they do have some hearings where they are have issues both that under the bill that now stands would be subject to hearing by an ALJ hired by the Workers' Compensation Board, and would also have issues in it that under the bill would normally require the assignment of a hearings officer from the panel. And the last thing they wanted to do is get a situation where they had to basically bifurcate the hearing and say, we're going to have two hearings for this person on these issues, because some of the issues are ALJ issues and some of them are panel hearings officers. So they requested amendments to the Dash 838 that would say that in those scenarios where they have both issues combined, that they would use the ALJ administrative law judges that they are now using for these types of hearings, rather than using a hearings officer from the panel.
I think we're going to corrupt ALJ. We ought to go ahead and give him administrative law judge.
Well, this is fine. Mr. Chair, I must say, I think this is a bit unfair. You don't have a piggy bank out and you haven't warned him.
I was here the other day.
All right.
Your rule. I think I got ALJ in there, but it was a little late.
I wasn't going to say anything because I didn't see the piggy bank.
we'll proceed to then. So basically, that would leave those hearings that are presently to be heard by administrative law judges would continue to make those arrangements and obtain the personnel necessary to do that.
So they would not have to split the hearings and have two different hearings when really one of the stuff was just, and they would just, the preference would be with the ALJ rather than with the hearings officer from the panel.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 39 amendments are technical amendments. Actually, came from legislative council. I believe they're just basically cleanup amendments to the Administrative Procedures Act to bring it into line technically with changes in the bill. The Dash 40 amendments requested by David Schuman at the Department of Justice concerned that there are some types of hearings where the state is administering a federal program. In which case the federal strings may require a certain hearings process or the designation of a certain hearing officer attached to an agency. This accommodates those cases where the use of the panel would either violate or could jeopardize violate federal law or jeopardize federal funding for a program that the state is administering. And then the last amendments are requested by the Employment Department, the Dash 841. If you recall, when we gave you the overview of the bill, when a hearing officer makes a determination of historic fact, then on appeal, and if the agency then modifies the hearing officer's finding of historic fact, it may only do so if it can establish that the hearing that the fact is not supported by a preponderance of the evidence in the record. This amendment accommodates Employment Department, Employment Appeals Board, which in fact conducts actually a de novo review of the hearing officer's of the hearing at the hearing officer's level, and so it would not be necessarily appropriate to limit them to that same standard, where they're actually looking at the whole thing on a de novo review, and then the appeal would be to the court from there. So that just makes it clear that that limitation on the modification of the hearing officer's findings of fact do not strictly apply in the cases where there is a de novo review.
Is an overview how frequently do you anticipate that will be at that particular point?
Well, we've got the employment folks here. They can probably tell you that.
Chair Butler, I believe the standard of review, for instance, with the Employment Reviews Board is always de novo for factual determination.
Okay.
And so that their concern was that the fiscal language with the bill simply said that agencies may not modify determinations of historical fact, that that might somehow be read to mean that the Employment Appeals Board
was not hearing the noble.
Were not hearing the noble. And that was not the intent.
Okay. All right. I understand that.
So that, Mr. Chair, is our amendments. I again would think that these have been vetted by the Governor's Office as part of the Justice Legislative Council, my office, and other proponents of the bill, as well as Employment Department. We are in concurrence on the adoption of the amendments, and I really appreciate your committee's time and attention in the devotion.
Thank you very kindly. Senator Trill?
Chair, I know that there was some work was being done on possible amendment for explaining the goals of this process through the pilot period. Did you do anything about those?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Crow, I think that rather than the amendment in the bill, there has been a budget note drafted that addresses that, and the standard of, as you know, we have in the bill an oversight committee. There's a budget note that I have seen and that is perfectly agreeable that would actually direct the oversight committee to preparing a method of review and standards and outcomes and those kinds of things against which to measure the success of the central panel.
That's better than being in the bill.
Yeah, and frankly, your question when you raised that earlier, we did at some point discuss putting some of those kind of standards in the bill, and we thought that as we worked with it, it didn't seem to fit that well within the bill. It didn't occur to us then to pursue the budget note route, but I think that's actually a very good way to go.
With that, we'll go ahead and open up the work session on Appeal 2525. Adrian?
Mr. Chair, just to recap, you have, as you indicated at the beginning of this public hearing, you have already adopted an emergency clause to make the measure effective August 1st of this year. You've also adopted the Dash A228 amendments, which would add the exemption for the state land board, and the A27 amendments, which exempted in part the Oregon University system. If, as you've discussed, you would as the subcommittee prefer to totally exempt the university system, you would need a motion, as Senator Cho was talking about, to recede from that amendment so that you bring the bill, it's already before you, but you bring it back to a status without that exemption in it. You would need the motion and vote on receding from that amendment, and then you could take up any subsequent amendments.
Chair, you ready for that motion?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that the subcommittee recede from its motion the A27 amendment to House Bill 2525.
You've heard the motion, having previously passed in the committee on the 19th, A26, A27, A28. Senator Trill now moves that we recede from A27, which had been previously adopted. Is there any objection? If not,
Mr. Chair,
Senator Lamb.
Maybe I left that clear. If the state was a reason to it.
Certainly. Senator Joe,
What had been done in A27 was to exempt part of the university system from coverage under the hearings officer program in each of the individual institutions. The intra-institutional cases were exempted already. What St. Federally said and what higher ed has agreed to is that it would make more sense to exempt the entire university system from this process. And that's what our motion will, once we recede from 27, we will move A36. We'll move A36, and that will exempt the entire system.
Entire system,
yeah.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other questions relative to the motion to go ahead and recede from A27 rather?
Mr. Chair, if I might just make one comment for the record.
Yes.
It's my understanding that the original fiscal effect of the program, the entire hearing panel program, did not take into account any kinds of hearings that would have been conducted on behalf of the state university system. So exempting them is a moot issue insofar as the fiscal impact gain is concerned.
I think you're absolutely correct. I don't recall anything in the original fiscal having to do with the education system, so
sure.
I think Senator Coe's motion to recede from -27 is very well placed. If there is no objection, then we will go ahead and recede from -27.
Sure, then do you want me to move it?
Let's start with A30, if we may. Sure. Senator, if you'd like to go ahead, that would then be inserted, A30.
Okay.
This brings the governor then in as an exempt party under Section 9, listing those 9- Section 9, subparagraph 2, would bring the governor in as an exempt party.
I'll move that.
Okay, it's been moved. The A30 amendments, are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And then A31 clarifies the construction contractors board portion with all six moving over, and with an understanding that two of those continue to do construction contractors board alternative dispute resolution work, even though they are transferred. Are there any objections in the inclusion of A31 amendments? -A31 are added. Okay, A32. This is the draft act hearings office, as Representative Shagerly indicated, relative to the state land board provisions for the hearings officer to be granted, granting of easements and offering land for lease, contains also the restorative language that we talked about before, relative to the post-sunset time, restorative to the other boards if this board does sunset in 4 years. Is there any objection to the A32-amendment, A32 included?
I'm not sure if you leave it up to them how you figure out what the cost is going to be of running the thing, but I guess there won't be a whole lot of cases that will be individually determined.
And I think, Senator Crowe, we probably won't, we may not get to the actual fiscal issue during this particular time together, but I appreciate your comment because it is timely. There may be some fiscal impact, and we did not ask either Mr. Lassenby or Mr. Hendricks about that. So, being no objection to the -832 amendments, we will add those to House Bill 2525. Now to the A34 amendments. Senator Lem is recognized.
Why do we have to go 4 years instead of 2 years? This is two biennium, this is a pilot program as I read it, and we should know by 2 years instead of 4 years whether it will be successful or not. What's the reason, justification for 4 years?
I think Mr. Lassenby was on that, and I'm not sure that Ms. Crosby could comment, but we'll invite Ms. Vernia Crosby forward from the Department of Employment. I think part of it was it got started in August of this year, and we needed some period of time to get up and running. Ms. Crosby?
Senator Lynn, you are correct. It does take time to actually bring this together. But probably the biggest reason is that the training issue. The individuals are definitely trained in the body of law right now, and over the course of one biennium, they will be getting training in some of the other program areas. And so the full extent of the actual merger, if you will, or pilot would be in that second biennium more than the first biennium.
One more thing.
One follow-up.
Since I'm not familiar with all of those issues, I'm just asking questions. What happened, is there any chances or cases maybe could be assigned some of the hearing officers who does not understand the issue well?
Chair, Chair and Senator Lim, there is an opt-out provision. For example, if you believe you would not get a fair hearing or perceive that you wouldn't, you would be able to opt for a different hearings officer.
One more. Certain kind of timeline. As I viewed it, the contested cases, what's the definition of contested cases?
Probably one of my hearings managers would be able to. It's basically where there is a administrative procedure that basically controls how the hearing is done, but I would give her a more legal definition.
Good afternoon. I'm Rebecca Osborne from the Employment Department. I'm the manager of the hearing section. Mr. Chairman, Senator Lim, the Administrative Procedures Act in Chapter 183 of the statute defines exactly what a contested case hearing is versus what's known as an other than contested case, which is where everything else would fall. And it specifies certain procedures that must be followed for a contested case hearing, including the appeal is typically to the Court of Appeals. With the other than contested cases, usually it falls to the Circuit Court of the county in that locality. So it's a procedural matter, and the appeal right is basically the most distinctive characteristics.
Okay.
That sounds.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the unique provisions, I think, with regard to this, thank you very much, Ms. Hawkins. One of the unique provisions is that both the agency or the person or persons or entity that is before the hearings officer, they both have opportunities to opt out and move away from the opinions and go to the next level of appeal under the hearing panel process. The 34-834 relative then to the Department of Environmental Quality, except for hearings conducted under the Oregon Revised Statutes 183.413 through 183.470, which are the contested case hearings. Is there any objection to adopting A34 amendments? If not, it's so ordered. And then A36. We had previously pulled out the entire, or had put in a left end a portion of the university systems, and then we acceded from that. When we acceded from the amendment, that left a portion in. And following Senator Crowe's lead, what we would do is we would insert those in, excuse me, in Section 9 as a portion of those who are, in effect, being totally exempted, the entire university system exempted. Are there any objections to the university system being totally exempted, recognizing that the fiscal has not ever contemplated their contribution at any point? If there's no objections to the A36 amendment, ordered included, and A37 dealing with the workers' compensation division. The administrative law judge portions. Allowing the workers' compensation division to go ahead and continue to use the administrative law judge in those hearings which are held pursuant to Oregon Revised Statute 656.740. It also contains the restorative language in that instance as well. Are there any objections to the A37 amendments? If not, so ordered. We can continue on then with the -A38 amendment. A38 amendment as permission for the director to determine what the hearing will use an administrative law judge. This refers back to A37 on the Workers' Compensation Board Hearings Division or a hearings officer from the hearings officer panel when the hearing involves actions or orders subject to each method of conducting hearing. It also, again, contains the restorative language under the sunset provision. Are there any objections to the A-A38 amendment?
I wonder what sort of criteria would determine the director's judgment.
I think it's probably controlled by 656-470. Because there are certain hearings, as I understand it, that require the administrative law judge, but then on -A38, it would indicate that any other, which would have normally in the past been heard by administrative law judges, but are not required to under that portion of the statutory code, could then be heard by an actual hearing officer. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I believe the -A38 part, or excuse me, the A37 is specific to a narrow band of hearings under 656-740. The -A38 are broader. There are some instances, as I understand it, where an issue before the workers' compensation division may have elements that would typically be handled. One set of circumstances about a case would go to the workers' compensation board hearings division and use an administrative law judge. Other elements of the same case would be typically covered by the kind of hearing process that the hearing officer panel would cover. In this, under the provisions of the A38 amendment, the director would be able to make the determination of which hearing forum to use for a particular case, if I understand the amendment correctly.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections to the A38 amendment to be included?
What's the agency sees any problem with those?
The least has representative from the workers' compensation division is available.
They've been involved in the issue, so they're okay.
Mr. Chair, my name is Ella Jones. I'm with the Department of Consumer Business Services. I'm not with the with competition, but I have worked with them before, and I'm very aware of the jurisdictional issues. I you discuss this in the department. They're fine with it. The employment department is fine with it, so it has no fiscal impact. You have to see real, very narrow circumstances where, for example, the director has jurisdiction over medical treatment cases, medical treatment disputes, whereas the workers' comp board has jurisdiction over compensability of the claim, whether the whole claim is compensable. There could be circumstances where somebody has filed a request for resolution of a medical treatment dispute where their claim has not been accepted by the insurer, and before the workers' comp board as a jury, whether their claim is compensable or not. And what would it be, so the director would then have the authority to shift that issue to the board in order to prevent any conflicting decisions or to for administrative efficiency as well. And it's just, I'm sure you all know how complicated the workers' comp system is. And this would just, would make it so that the claimant wasn't kind of bounced back and forth, and in one forum found compensable and the other not.
Do you think it would work better? Would it work equally fairly to the interests of the worker himself?
Yes, in fact, I think it would be beneficial for the worker.
Thank you, Senator. You're very timely. I just might state for the record that looking at the fiscal impact as well, that it really would identify a very narrow band, the fiscal, total fiscal being charged for the Workers' Compensation Insurance Division would be a total of $150,600, which is a very small portion of, I'm sure, of their hearings, total hearings prospect. Are there any objections to the A38 amendments being included? Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for your testimony. If there are no objections, then we'll order those in as a part of House Bill 2525. A39-839 amendments restores authority to an agency to issue a subpoena on the request of the party of a contested case, provides technical adjustments to statutes. And this, as I recall, were just some, basically the hearings or some insertions opportunities to modify the language, to clarify the language in a number of different pieces of this piece of instruction. Are there any objections to including dash A39 amendments? None so ordered. A40 adds an exemption from using the hearings officer and hearings officer panel when required by federal law or if receipt of federal funds could be lost, as explained to us by Representative Shetterly, under those which requires other than the hearings officers or hearings panels be involved. Are there any objections to the dash A40 amendments? Being none, we'll go ahead and order the A40 amendment. A41 clarifies the restriction and modification of finding of historical fact in an agency in contested cases hearings, and we have heard testimony today relative to A41 that basically, particularly in certain cases, they must be held de novo, and those cases being held de novo, that historical fact is wiped away through this particular amendment. Any objections to the dash A41 amendment? Being none, so ordered. And the A42 finally, as explained, for limitations increasing for panel agencies and hearings officer panel on appropriations general fund, the Adult and Family Services Division of the Department of Human Resources and Water Resources Department. This is the full fiscal agent.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. The dash A42 amendment specifies that the general fund portions of the fiscal impact that was discussed by you last week are contained in here, that the Department of Human Resources and Water Resources each have a small amount of general fund appropriation in here. The remainder are expenditure limitation increases for the panel agencies, and there is a cumulative expenditure limitation for the employment department for purposes of administering and operating the hearing officer panel, and that is the $20,163,680 figure that was distributed in a spreadsheet that John Britton had prepared last week. So the numbers are those figures that would adjust the panel agency's budget accordingly.
So this this reaches in the, if I understand correctly, the A-42 amendments reach in then to each of the various agencies' their budgets, which are presently either proposed or in the process of completion, and remove from those agencies sufficient to fiscally fund Hospital 2525.
That is correct.
Is the overall effect of increasing the amount of cost for the the hearings process, and if so, how much?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trowe, the total overhead increase that's been described is approximately $2.1 million. Those are the overhead charges that will be paid to the employment department by the panel agency.
Above and beyond. What are the costs otherwise?
Current level.
2.1.
That's $2,090,392, of which $106,877 is general fund. $106,877.
The with that, there's also an additional 8 hearings officers, as I understand. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair, that's a total of 8 FTE, and the positions are in a variety of areas. There are some support staff and technical staff to support the program.
Okay. administrative support as well as central office.
Correct.
Okay. You've heard the information contained in the Dash 82 amendments. Are there any objections to the A42 amendments? If not, we'll add those to House Bill 2525. May I just inquire then at that particular point, with all of those amendments in, and that covers the fiscal provisions, are we ready then to go ahead and pass? Ms. Session, do you have a fiscal report that you or Mr. Britton would like to make from the Legislative Fiscal Office at this time?
Mr. Chair, the fiscal impact statement was presented to the subcommittee last week with a variety of other substantive information. If there are any questions to that fiscal impact statement, I'd be happy to elaborate.
For the record, those are the ones that are dated May 1999.
Correct.
Okay.
The chair of all these amendments, I would think that that would have to be revised somewhat.
We will certainly have to rewrite a few little areas, although primarily the impact statement was written, structured in such a way that it talks about the core language that created a fiscal impact, and to the best of my knowledge, that I will certainly be reviewing the amendments that you've adopted to make a determination that there is no other fiscal impact created. So we will have to update the fiscal impact statement regardless. And if it is determined that there are some other changes to numbers, although it's been represented to me that there shouldn't be any change in how many hearings are conducted that would significantly affect workloads, for instance, the workers' compensation division fees. There are workload numbers that have been assumed and built into the fiscal impact for the entire panel. And there's also some leeway in there for the panel to conduct work for the boards and commissions, and they also have an opportunity provided by the measure to seek contracts with other public agencies and jurisdictions to assist in providing services on a contract basis.
And I understand they charge for the contract $55 an hour, is that?
That is the estimate that's built into the impact statement.
Okay. Just by way of review, the employment department is included, and if any of these, I can only see one that we've really talked about today that really makes or that may have any impact. The employment department, these are the contributors: employment department, water resources department, motor vehicles division, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, the construction contractors board, and that was the full fixed position, the adult and family services division, and the workers' compensation insurance division. And the workers' compensation insurance division is the one that we have in fact incorporated a substantive as 37 and 38, and it only discusses those which are pulled away from the administrative law judge, which was not contemplated. I don't think we didn't have in the fiscal an administrative law judge contemplated.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, there wouldn't be any change in the position transfers as a result of the two amendments that you adopted, -37, -38. It would simply clarify who conducts certain kinds of hearings that may not be appropriate for the hearing officer's panel. And it's my understanding that it's a rather narrow band of hearings that would they would prefer to hold with the administrative law judges.
And again, as previously indicated, the workers' compensation insurance divisions were only transferring their fiscal impact, the additional fiscal impact under the workers' compensation is $150,602.
Correct, and that would not change under the amendments that you've adopted.
So I don't know of any others that we've adopted that may have any other subs. substantial change.
We exempted a number of people. Of course, the Oregon University system, they were included before.
They weren't fit in the
system. But there is. If they had been, there would have been substantial difference. And I guess as you've done work for them anyway.
Mr. Chair and Senator Tro, it's my understanding that the workload was never construed to include any of the hearings that might have been generated. It was not really contemplated that the university system was subject to this.
Oh, I see. They weren't.
I'm sorry, it was just a big poof.
What about the state land board? Did it poof too, and the governor poof, and who else sort of poofed out of it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tro, the numbers of and types of hearings that those entities or authorities had that they may have conducted, again, were probably not construed in the workload aspect that created the staffing requirement. This is an example, however, in the House Judiciary Committee, they did exempt out certain elements of the Racing Commission. The Board of Stewards conduct on-site, right then, hearings because of the drug testing that's required or the total finish results and those kinds of things. And so those particular hearings, because of the timeliness and perhaps they weren't appropriate to then go off and request the hearings off the panel process. So those were pulled out. Again, it did not change the overall workload impact.
Thank you very much. Senator Lemon is
right. I was absent last whole week, so he's already been heard of. But it's 135.25 FTE. Are they all of them are shipped? Or how many other brand new?
Mr. Chair and Senator Lim, there are a total of only 8 new FTEs that will result from the creation of the hearing officer panel. The remainder are current employees of the panel agencies who will become employees of the central hearing panel. By having a new subdivision at the employment department with a fairly large staff, there will be some, and by direction of the bill, there will be a new central hearing officer, chief hearing officer, and that person will be directly responsible for the staff. So there are some additional administrative and technical support staff that fall into the 8 new FTE, some management staff because of the numbers of hearings officers that are involved as well as support staff.
Okay. Mr. Chair, one final question.
Certainly, sir. Let me follow up.
So, what's the reason for creating this CUCA board instead of a current system that will work well? So this will create a better, I don't know, I'm sure it's actually discussed, but just a 1 minute just explanation if possible. Because if the same system goes over there, still they are going to be that hearing officer for the same issue. Only because it's different that the agreement, and then hiring 8 more people just making government bigger, just more tax dollars. That's the justification I want to find out.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Lynn, the discussion started certainly no later than last session when a measure went through both chambers and was vetoed by the governor. And during the interim, a number of legislators from the governor's office and agencies worked to develop a consensus concept, which is embodied in House Bill 2525. The issue was primarily one of fairness, that is, an individual who goes before a governing body, whether it's the director of a department or a commission and the commissioner, whether it's an occupational regulatory board or Department of Environmental Quality, by taking a matter that the person is being regulated by this agency in some fashion, and they are taking their case on denial of something, perhaps, or taking exception to a decision that governing body has made, but they're having to take their appeal to that same governing body.
Okay. Thank you.
probably more an appearance than anything else, and it's hoped that over the 2 year period that you could absorb cases and high peaks and low peaks as well.
So I was trying to say that it took the pops away from the chicken egg.
Out of the way anyway.
I was just going through the 20,163,680. Okay, all these numbers, I am numbers match and the A42 match with your fiscal analysis. With that, we're in a position then to go ahead on House Bill 2525, recommending it to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, as it has been amended to the A42 amendment. Are there any objections to proceeding with a due pass recommendation to the full House, to the full Ways and Means?
Where the Senate of I was going to vote no, excuse me.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I'm going to oppose no on the basis of creating 8 more new positions, which is not necessary. That's the conclusion. I'm voting no if you say yes.
Aye. I would say
that. Just a robot.
Mr. Chair, I object to trading posts over here on the other side of the table.
Senator Lim has expressed concern over the 8 new positions which will be created in the process of creating a statewide hearing panel. I would appreciate that objection and the concern that you would have. I think it was a concern, and I think that in some of the testimony, I guess I came to the conclusion that in order to remove or give the appearance of removal for a more independent hearings process, or the appearance of a greater level of independence without having to go all the way to the judiciary, because that's what we do, is we avoid the next step, which would be the judicial step, that it would well be worth the fiscal impact that we may be able to save money at the judicial level by having this particular step.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, share Senator Lynn's concerns about creating additional employment positions within the state. However, I also have reached your conclusion, and I think if we can facilitate what I would consider to be a more fair hearing process for our constituents, then I think that is a worthy goal, worthy of an investment. And no one ever said that the price of freedom or liberty was cheap.
Oh, my God.
I missed the chair.
I'm in, sir. How do you know, sir?
Mr. Chair, there are times when more government is good government.
Yeah. Very few, Senator.
Okay, we have Senator Lim as a no vote. Other no votes, members of the committee. Be recorded that Senator Lim is a no vote. Other than that, we will high votes all the way around. Shall we go to a... Senator Perry Olden, you have a question?
I just put my opposition to this bill has gone
poof.
I think you better gavel this out.
We were moved recognizing the absence of Representative Hansen and the opposition of Senator Lim. We will move this to the full Ways and Means. Thank you.
We have no shame.